what would it look like to actually validate my needs and trust myself and be my own security so that what you do isn't the reason for my emotional safety? Because I have a safe place to land in my own body, in my own life, you know?
Exactly.
Hello and welcome to the Personal Development School podcast. I am so excited you're here. I am your co-host, Thais Gibson, along with our new special host, Mike Dizio. This is a podcast that discusses everything related to integrated attachment theory, the new attachment theory, along with the subconscious mind, relationships, communication, needs, boundaries, and so much more. Throughout this podcast, you'll see a series of episodes I upload with new information, educational tips all about how to thrive in relationships and really master your emotional state in your life, along with special guests hosted by Mike Dizio to discuss all of these amazing topics in some longer form content. Thank you so much for being here, and I really hope you enjoy this episode.
My guest today is a life coach and podcast host of the Deep Talk podcast. She's based in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and is passionate about helping people deepen their understanding to themselves to build better relationships and a deeply fulfilling life. Her coaching focuses around mindset and helping clients make transformations in their love life. Personal Development School podcast watchers and listeners, I'd like to introduce Madison Branch. Hello,
hey.
Madison. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you? How's the day been?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Better now that you're here. So
I love it. I love it. I love
and
it.
And you're just sharing how you're not usually on this side of the podcast chair. So it's a treat to interview you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I would just like, it's always, I'm like, I want to ask you questions. So it's going to be funny receiving and answering. So I love it. It's great. It's great.
You're the star today. Perfect.
Yay. I love it.
So just to start for our viewers who, if anybody doesn't know you, I was wondering if you could just spend a few moments letting us know who you are, what you do, and maybe a bit of your backstory.
I'm Madison Brandt. I'm a life coach. Again, I have a podcast and I really focus a lot on coaching people around dating and relationships. I'm really passionate about human connection and knowing ourselves better, learning about ourselves and healing so we can build better relationships to other people. And yeah, again, create a life that really feels worth living and really fulfilling. And so, yeah, that's a little bit more about me. Backstory. Oh my goodness. I'm like, do you have the time? Kind of a weird path to getting here. I grew up wanting to be a makeup artist and actually went to school in New York to do that. And when I was there, had like a little quarter life crisis. I was like, this isn't the lifestyle that I want. I love making people feel beautiful, but I feel like there's a piece of that that felt not deep enough for me. And when I was out there, I started my podcast and ended up kind of having this windy road to getting where I am now, which is I got really into wellness when I was there, transferred schools, spent the few years after that getting into yoga and wellness and got my coaching certification. And it kind of all spiraled into where I am now. So it was a very long few years of just figuring myself out and what I wanted to do, which I'm sure you probably had yourself too, of just knowing who you are and what you want to do. But yeah, that's kind of a overview of how I got here. You can definitely but yeah, it's a weird one.
Yeah, I never heard the term quarter life crisis before. I thought it was always just midlife crisis, but I like that as well. I can say I had that as well too. It was kind of mid-20s where I felt like I wasn't happy and I needed to make a change. So thanks for sharing. That's great. So you're the creator and the host of the Deep Talk podcast. What was your inspiration to start the podcast? And what are some of the main things that you cover on your podcast?
Yeah. I started it when I was in school and I kind of started it because, again, with my quarter life crisis, I was like, this would be a great way to interview people and hear what people are doing that's a little bit creative and out of the box to kind of just learn what other people are doing. Because I, at that time, I didn't know, but I was like, I know I want to do something different. And it was also kind of a way to express myself and learn more about myself. I really learned I like speaking. So it's kind of a combination of those things. When I was doing it and interviewing all these people, I was like, oh my goodness, this can be a career. You can do podcasts, you can do life coach, you can do all these things. So it's so funny that what I was using to find something ended up kind of being the thing. But yeah, that's what I kind of started as. And now it's just a lot of interviews. I switch off between doing myself and interviewing people, and it's all self-help. My social media is a lot more focused on dating and relationships, but I feel like my podcast is expansive to all the necessary ingredients to building a fulfilling life. dating relationships and career and purpose and self-help mindset, all the fundamentals of that self-work. And yeah, I feel like I was like called it the deep talk because I feel like everyone in my life is always like, do we need to have a deep talk like this right here, right now? I'm like, what else is there to say? So it's funny. But yeah, that's a little bit more about the podcast. And yeah. Yeah.
I love that. Like so many things about that. You've been doing this for a while. So I think probably one of the reasons why you've done this for a while is because you're meeting so many needs while you're doing it. You love deep talk. I know myself, I love deep, meaningful conversation and personal development. So really what you're doing is like a labor of love. You're enjoying it. So it probably doesn't feel like, you know, oh, I got to do another podcast. You're enjoying every episode and doing what you would be doing anyway with your friends or, you know, anybody else, even if you weren't doing the podcast. So I really love that. And we always encourage people, if you know you have a need for a deep, meaningful connection and people say, oh, I can't, you know, I can't seem to get that, bring it to you. Start a podcast, start a meetup group, do stuff where you're bringing the deep conversation to yourself. So I commend you on that. And it seems like you have a lot of fun when you do it.
Yeah, I resonate so much with all of that you say. I had a girl on my podcast a few weeks ago, and we were talking about like this concept of bringing intimacy into your life, and that a lot of people feel lonely, not because of like the amount of people, but because they're not having like deep and meaningful conversations. And I think that obviously I have friends in my life that I do that with, but you know, the people that I have on my podcast, you know, they just reach a different level. They do this for their life, their career, their purpose. And so having conversations with people that are like that often, it fills me up so much and it fuels purpose into my life and the depth. And I learn so much. I'm always talking to like interesting people and developing myself. It's like self-work in its own. It's great. And I think anything that you do for a long time and are consistent with, especially when you start and do it for free for a long time to start, it has to be something that you care about. And what better than to talk to cool people all day. So
I love it.
Yeah.
And you're right. A lot of people, you know, sometimes you're lonely or missing that intimacy, and you might have a lot of friends, but it's way more beneficial to sort of deepen the intimate relationship with smaller groups of people, improving your close relationships, than trying to kind of water it down with like a whole bunch of different people.
Sure.
I dig that as well. So in your own life, like for your own personal growth journey or healing journey, did you have like a rock bottom moment, a catalyst, or did you meet someone who like really pushed you into being, okay, I want to do my own healing and I need to sort of dive into this sort of head first?
Yeah, I think more into I feel like my New York experience was like its own thing, but it also tied into so many other parts of my like healing, because I've struggled with mental health my whole life. You know, I grew up with a lot of anxiety, and that was the first time when I got there and experienced a lot of depression. I think purpose is tied to depression a lot. When you kind of lose that grounding, I was like, I don't care about anything. And you stop caring. Yeah, I struggled a ton with depression there, and ended up, when I transferred, came home and just had years of just really, really struggling, getting on medication, all the things. And so that was kind of my quote unquote rock bottom, just like a real switch in who I thought that I was. And I think that tied into my own mental health struggles, and everything kind of came to a head there. And I realized, I was like, while I was starting my podcast and kind of learning about stuff, I was like, oh my goodness, you can listen to podcasts and read books and help yourself. And so that's me getting out of my own anxiety, depression, all the things that I was struggling with, was my own journey to everything that I do now, which is so cool. But that's what helped me dive into my healing, of just being like, I need to get out of this. I'm going to learn as much as I can, read all the books, podcasts, do everything, which kind of builds your own well of knowledge. And I think that what you heal with yourself kind of becomes like the medicine that you can give to others through coaching practice, through just day-to-day life with the people that you love, like how you support and help others. And so, yeah, it's so crazy that the hardest, most like dark times in my life, and it's so weird to be able to like encapsulate it like this, like me be able to like smile and talk about this when it was so hard for so long.
For sure.
But it's so crazy how the hardest part of my life is like the reason why I do what I do, of okay, the mental health struggles, all the hardest things, is actually like why I've learned everything and why I have the career that I have. And it's crazy. It's, yeah, I never would have thought, but yeah, it's for sure.
And I imagine, and I've heard this from a lot of people, and I could say this for myself too, I wouldn't trade those dark days and awful, awful depressions and anxieties for anything, because it wouldn't have led me to doing all this inner work and healing and understanding myself and the subconscious mind and all those kind of things. So I imagine you're sort of the same, where you're like, yeah, it wasn't fun, but I wouldn't trade it for the world, right?
No, I mean, I wouldn't trade it for anything, but it's when you're going through it, and you've probably experienced that. It's like, yeah, it's horrible, and you never think it's going to get better, and you feel completely alone. And, you know, I think you're also your own person, so your struggles look very different than anyone else, and that feels lonely. And so it's just, the whole thing is hard, but I wouldn't trade it for anything, because it's definitely like the catalyst to where I am now, which is crazy. It's crazy, yeah. But I think that's a great way to find your passions, is look at where your struggles are.
Exactly. You know? And I like how you touched on purpose. It makes so much sense. If you're doing things that are completely opposite of what your purpose is, you can imagine everything inside of it is, you're like, is like, what are you doing? We want to do this thing. This is what makes us happy. But instead, we're forcing ourselves to do something like 40, 50 hours a week that we just do not like. And we, you know, sucks the soul out of us. And it just makes sense. So really doing things on purpose and that light you up is so important. Otherwise, it's almost inevitable that you're going to go into a depression or, you know, suffer for it.
I feel like growing up, my mom always thought it was so funny, because I would always be doing a project. I always had something I was interested in. And I think someone who struggles with mental health and, you know, being quote unquote neurodivergent, I guess, I think that I found with myself, if I don't have something that I'm working on that lights me up and that is purposeful, if I didn't have all of this, I think I would be still depressed. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think like purpose is sometimes like the antidote of depression, of really finding what makes you feel alive and want to get up every day. And so.
Yeah, totally. Well said. It's that reason to get out of bed, you know, for sure.
Yeah, I'm like, gotta film. gotta have a mic. Definitely.
So talking about attachment style, I know that before you were sort of anxious, preoccupied attachment style. Yeah. I know you've done a lot of work on that. I was just wondering, what were some of the hardest things when you were the most anxious, preoccupied while dating or in relationships? And then can you give us a few tips on sort of how you healed it and how you sort of became a little more secure in dating, relationships and all that?
I think that it's weird, because I know that like attachment styles are created from childhood, and I look back and I'm like, I don't remember having a childhood where anything was necessarily wrong. So it's very fascinating. Why have I been so anxious in these relationships? But in every single relationship, romantic relationship I was in, and even sometimes experienced it a touch in close friendships, but in those romantic relationships, it's like anytime there was like any pulling away, any like inconsistency, especially with like texting or all those things, I had like this just such a big body response. And for anyone who, I don't know if you struggle with an attachment style or people can relate, but like for anxious, like it was just any of those moments, I just had like these crazy anxious feelings in my body, and they were so hard to cope with. Right. And they made me feel a little bit crazy, because I was like, I know underneath this, I'm a healthy, secure person, but I can't, this feeling, my body is so strong. I would literally take naps during the day, like awful. Like I would, like when I was dating people, I'd be like, this is so overwhelming.
Yeah.
I need to sleep this off. Like if somebody was not responding for a super long time.
Sorry to interject. I was on like the avoidance side of things. So this is whenever I hear about this, I've heard from talk to many APs, and it's always fascinating, but it's almost like a panic type feeling where you're like, oh my God, you know, that feeling where you're panicking, like something really bad is happening right now. Yeah. Is it kind of like that? And also where in the body did you experience it most? Some people talk about the chest or maybe in the neck. Was there any localized area where this would always show up?
Right above my belly button, like kind of that upper stomach, right below your chest kind of area. Just like this tight, like anxious, I wouldn't say it's panic attack energy, but just like this tight, overwhelming feeling. And it's just it's just such a dysregulation and inability to sit still and be with yourself. And I think it's because you've made this person the thing that makes you feel stable. So when they're not available to you all the time or providing that consistency, because I mean, there's gonna be times where people are busy or whatever, you know, you freak out. And it feels so crazy to say those things, because I don't feel any of that now, which we'll get into. Like I barely have that at all now. But yeah, it was miserable dating people. And I honestly felt like the most emotionally unstable, sick version of myself in relationships, which is like, I stopped dating for a while. Cause like, I was like, this is miserable. And I'm fascinated by avoidance too. But I think both sides want love, but both sides have these ways to cope with these emotions that we're feeling.
For sure. Did you find in dating you had to almost hide it or try to tone it down? Because you're like, oh my God, like my partner is going to be so worried if he sees how worked up I get when I don't answer a text message or I don't phone back right away. Would you find there was a bit of shame or a little bit of like worry that your partner wouldn't find that attractive or, you know, becoming?
Oh, totally. I always felt like I had to hide it. And I also feel like I dated a lot of avoidant people, which we know is not helpful.
Right.
But yeah, I felt so ashamed and I felt like there was something wrong with me. And some people I felt like I could talk to about it a little bit and just be like, hey, letting you know, and kind of like sharing, like sometimes it's helpful to have validation or this is why I act these ways sometimes. But there's other people that are not, you know, I didn't feel as comfortable with. So yeah, it kind of depended. But yeah, I definitely felt shame. And it's like this part of you that isn't you, but it is you. And yeah, when I was going through, it was like a big part of my life for a while where I was like, I need to heal this. Like I was looking at my journal the other day and I remember like for a year, I was like, I hope my goal at the end of the year is to not have this anymore. Like I was like, I can't do it anymore. I have to work on this. But yeah.
And that's amazing that you know, gave yourself that gift to be like, enough is enough and we got to work on this. And you want to touch on, was there any sort of methods or like certain things you did that really helped along the process?
Oh my gosh. I feel like the reason why I share so much about this is because it's again, that lived experience. I feel like I could give like the exact method. Like I share it on my social media. I'm like, this is exactly what I would do because it's the only thing that works for me. But it's a few things. I think, well, part of it is just growing up and getting more comfortable with yourself. A lot of people I was dating when I was younger were me choosing the worst partners ever. I think I'm all about self-work, but I think that there's a point where it's not only you, it's also important to be like, who am I choosing? Because I was choosing unavailable people who were avoidant. So you can heal in relationships. And I think that's how you can really heal your attachment style. But you doing that with somebody who's always running away from you and not providing you with safety and security and unavailable to you prolongs this cycle. Sure. And so for me, I was just dating a bunch of unavailable men constantly and like keeping my attachment style. And so a big part of my healing was, you know, one, the awareness of it and doing my own work and understanding where this originate, kind of looking at my patterns, two, building my own life, really having a life that was separate from somebody that I could have my own friends, hobbies, a grounded space. Mm-hmm. And then three, really choosing people who were emotionally available, secure, not avoidant. I would really recommend anyone read the book Attached to really understand more about why it's important to not have avoidant anxious together, unless you're both really willing to work together.
Yeah.
But dating secure people who are available. I would be dating people that I was like, I never feel comfortable bothering them with things. Someone who's like a real partner to you and you know is going to be there, because I found that when you have somebody that you know is consistent and there, you don't feel the need to have all this anxiousness and stress. But when someone's not, you feel like you need them all the time. So I can feel that with my friends, the people that I know are just there, I am the most chill with. Mm-hmm. But I think really focusing on finding somebody secure. And sorry, this is so long. But the last piece I would touch on is the nervous system, which I think is so important. It's like, you can do stuff on your own. I think cold baths and like cold therapy and doing like your own self-soothing techniques. But like, in a healthy relationship, when you get triggered, again, hopefully it's with a secure partner, using those moments to learn how to calm yourself and also work with your partner if they're available to, you know, comfortable with that kind of a thing, to be able to in those moments be like, okay, it's actually fine. And over time, every time you get triggered, it gets less and less and you learn to trust more and your nervous system doesn't freak out as much. And yeah, it's almost like a touch of trauma in your body that you're kind of healing over time by like having those little dysregulations and in those moments, like soothing again and again and again until your nervous system builds strength. And that's pretty much helped me, like dating people who are secure and working through it over time with them or by myself. But now my nervous system, I feel like, is so strong. If I'm dating and I'm like, oh, they're unavailable, I don't touch it. I run so far. But if they, you know, are available and they're secure, I never feel anxiety anymore. So that's my long-winded healing method.
It's a big topic and there's so many good things in there. I just wanted to comment on one of the things there, which is really important that we know for APs. And you touched on it with number two, where you have to cultivate your own life and purpose and things outside of the relationship, outside of someone else. If you're not doing the things that make you happy and bring you your own joy, and you're just solely focused on the other person, you're going to be self-abandoning all the time and choosing what they want to do, choosing what they want to talk about, choosing what they want to, where they want to go on vacation. You're just going to abandon yourself over and over and over just to keep this person in your life. And it's just such a disservice because everybody has so much to offer the world. And when you don't sort of step into you and your own gifts and what you're here for, it's just really sad. And then, you know, you're almost like squandering a beautiful thing. So we do know APs, it's, you do need to get back to that relationship with yourself and start asking yourself, what makes me happy? What makes me tick? Not, you know, how do I stay happy with my partner? How do I keep them happy? So it's more that inner focus, which you touched on.
Yeah, it's, you have to not make them like your center point, I guess, of like your groundedness, like kind of coming back to you and being like, okay, I am like the center point of my life, like invalidating yourself and your needs, because you're constantly abandoning yourself. You're like, my needs don't matter. I remember being like, oh, you can hang out today. I'll cancel my plans, like all these things so I can feel safe and not anxious. And it's like, okay, well, what would it look like to actually validate my needs and trust myself and be my own security so that what you do isn't the reason for my emotional safety, because I have a safe place to land in my own body, in my own life.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. And maybe this is my avoidant side saying, but like nobody's going to be there forever. Sadly, breakups happen. People pass away. Just so many different things happen. So of course you want to like nurture and make sure your relationship's in a good place, but also nurture yourself because you're with yourself 24/7, 365 until the finish line. That other person can be here for a week, a month, 10 years, or, you know, up until the day you die. But knowing that, you have to really, you know, put that into yourself and not overgive and, again, self-abandon, because you never know what's going to happen.
Exactly. I remember talking to one of my friends when I was going through this, and she was like, I think when you get to the point where you are so fine losing them or just anybody in your life because you know that you can handle it, because you're your own landing point versus somebody else, that's when you know you've healed a lot. Because now when I date people, I'm like, oh, it's okay if you leave. You're just, and that's not to say that you're not excited or that you're not you care, but it's a healthy detachment, because you're like, if it's not you, it's going to be someone else. But regardless, I still get to have my love story. I still get to be happy.
Yeah. And
that has nothing to do with you.
I'm not going to put you in a cage and be like, you have to be with me. If it's just not working out, that's okay. We'll respectfully, you know, go our separate ways and I'll be fine. And that's that. So
it's self-love. It's like, self-worth. It's like, I think the last thing I'll say about this whole thing is just like, I think when you can be like, even if what I need in a relationship or who I am and how I show up is looks different than other people, I have to at one point be honest about the fact that that's who I am and validate that, and then date around that and live my life around that. If you need more communication, or if you're someone who needs certain things or certain type of person, when you can really just be like, well, that is who I am, and I'm not going to change for you because that's not going to work out. Let's be logical. To really validate yourself and your needs and who you are can bring relationships into your life that actually honor that, and then you can kind of just detach from the outcome because you're like, well, I get to show up how I desire to show up.
Beautiful. Good answer.
So welcome to our Personal Development School free attachment style test. If you have less than 3 minutes, really, it usually takes to fill out this test, we have a few questions for you to help you really determine exactly your attachment style and even the breakdown. So if you're leaning a certain direction, if you have a secondary attachment style, it will help break all of this down for you. Essentially, the quiz is here. It's at the Personal Development School website. You just click attachment style test at the top, and there are a series of questions here that you can take. And as you go through the questions, you will see that by the end of this, you actually have the ability to obtain a free report There's a tremendous amount of detail in that report in terms of what your attachment style is, what different patterns you have, wounds, fears, needs that are going to be important for you to navigate relationships, the best ways to learn to emotionally regulate. And we even talk about some of the relationship you might have to your boundaries or patterns of communication and activating or deactivating strategies. So there's a tremendous amount of information that will help you break everything down. It's a great quiz for you to take, or for you to take with a loved one, with a partner, with a friend who may also be curious about what their attachment style is. You'll see at the end, you get a full report. And if you decide to submit your email, we actually email a really detailed report, even more so than on the landing page, to your inbox. So I hope you check it out. I hope you enjoy and can't wait to see how your attachment style learning journey goes.
My next question touches kind of on number three, and you have a podcast episode called Breaking the Cycle of Emotionally Unavailable People. So I was wondering if you could first let us know, like, what are some signs that people might want to look out for someone who's emotionally unavailable? Because I don't think it's always super obvious. And maybe give us a bit of an explanation of how to break that cycle.
Yeah, I think emotional unavailability is really tied into like the anxious attachments, that like why it's so important to not choose those types of people. Signs, I think that emotionally unavailable people, one, I feel like they're pretty anti-committal, are uncomfortable with conversations about, making
not even wanting to have the conversation.
They run away from that. They run away from intimacy and like connective conversations, talking about emotions, things that are further than the surface or just like physical. I think a lot of times emotionally unavailable people, are looking for relationships, or I always feel like they're looking for the benefits of the connection without the responsibility. That's like my quote. I always say they enjoy the connection, but they don't want to be there when it's not convenient for them. Yeah, literally. And that's not to say that emotionally unavailable people are bad. I've been emotionally unavailable in my life where I've been out of a relationship and needing space and couldn't commit. And I think there's an important ability to understand, oh, I'm unavailable right now. I'm not going to go jump in the dating world and give people my unavailability, make people, tied in with that. I'm going to actually step back, which is what I've done, of like healing and being able to not go and fears the dating world of my problems. But yeah, those are some signs. And what was the other question? Like how to break the cycle, I guess?
Yeah. How to sort of, if you find yourself that you're always kind of dating emotionally unavailable people, maybe what's something that could help with breaking that cycle?
Yeah, I dated the same person with a different face for 5 years. Yeah. Emotionally unavailable after emotionally unavailable person, because I think your body, I think so much of attraction comes from what you know. And it was just a cycle. I was like, well, this is normal that they don't want to date me. This is normal that it's so hard. And I think at some point, take a pause, realize that as annoying as unavailable people are, might be to you, and how frustrating it is, you're the picker, you're the common denominator. And that's the hard thing, is when you finally take that pause and realize, oh, maybe it's me. Maybe I'm fueling the continuation of these people in my life. What does that mean about me? Am I emotionally unavailable? Am I not comfortable with real love? Really looking at yourself, am I not being aware enough to really see what's going on in these relationships? And so I think my best tip is to, one, look at yourself, and two, take things really slow and get to know people and look at the signs. And it doesn't mean you have to be obnoxiously hypervigilant, but like you can date people and be like, okay, they don't want to have deep conversations. They don't want to commit. Next, just giving yourself a slow time to really see those signs, and knowing that if that's how they are, that's okay, but you can still have what you want of a relationship. I think I was hyper aware about my own patterns and how I was dating until it kind of became subconscious. With anything, you're really focusing on it until you're like, I stop being attracted to those people altogether, until it kind of changes,
Yeah, like taking accountability for you being the constant is a tough thing to do, to take a look, good hard look and be like, hey, it seems like the same thing keeps happening over and over. And I could blame it on, oh, this guy was a jerk, or this girl was a narcissist, or like always kind of point the finger outwards. But if you take a long, hard look, there's probably going to be some patterns in each person that you dated. And I like how you put it was like the same person with different face. And I really think it's not until you do that and you sort of figure out what your role is in co-creating this type of relationship over and over and over, I think you can't heal. So it's uncomfortable and it's not fun. And it's easier to sort of point fingers and talk to your friends and be like, oh, this person was such a jerk. And your friend's like, I know, get away from him, he's toxic. But really, you really have to look at your own sort of patterns of behavior and why you're choosing those kind of people and why you're putting up with that kind of stuff. But yeah, those are some great tips on identifying that. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I saw this post that girl posted like a few weeks ago where she was like, it's not that you attract emotionally unavailable people, like they go everywhere. It's just that you're choosing them, you know, you're choosing to let that stay. And so, you know, if you can realize you're not attracting them, you're attracted, and that you're choosing them, then you can be like, oh, okay, well, what is it going to take for me to shift that attraction by, like, I know this might sound weird, but like really being open to like a different type and trying to date different people and like being like, okay, this person's really interested in me. That's really gross to me, but I'm going to try it anyway.
I'm going to sit in uncomfortableness and like see how it feels after a while instead of just like running away right away.
Yeah. Everything in life. I just posted it the other day. I was like, if you can like handle like discomfort, then you can do anything.
Yeah. For sure. So for all the single people out there who are in the fun dating world, online dating, all that stuff, you have a podcast on dating mindfully as well. What are some tips people can use to sort of navigate the dating world in the best possible way?
I think the dating world, like I was saying before, it's kind of crazy. Like, I think there's a lot of people out there who are looking for things. There's a lot of people out there who are unavailable, whatever. But I think that the most important thing you can do, because, you know, whether you're in dating apps, whether you're just out in the world, there's so much out there that I think the most important thing to do is be sure who you are, be sure who you want, because the only constant that we ever have in life is what we can control. And if we can, you know, if you're single right now and you're looking for a partner, it's kind of like, well, is my side of the street clean? Am I, you know, working on my healing? Am I getting clear on what I want, my patterns? I follow the angry therapist and I love him. And I think what he was saying when he was single for like a few years, he's like, this is the best time to cultivate knowing yourself so that when someone does come along, ready. Not to say that you can't get ready in a relationship, because you can, but if you are, you know, alone right now, it's like, well, I think I can look at a lot of my friends. Some are single because they're thriving in the single season, but I would say most of my friends who are single are healing and working on their own patterns. And that's why they're not in a relationship or a healthy relationship, is because they have work to do. And, you know, we all have work to do. So I think that's really important, just to get clear on you and your healing and what you need and deserve and desire. And then I would just say, go out, do the things that you love, because that's where you're going to shine and meet like-minded people. I joined a lifting group a few years ago because I was like, this would be a great way to meet men. And then I went there and I was like, I hated it and quit really, really quick after. And I'm like, if you don't do things just to meet people, do things that you love with the hope to meet people, because you're not going to have staying power to be somewhere. If you don't love it, you're not going to glow the same way. So be open, do things you love. Dating apps are always a good tool to use. And I think the most important is just to be self-compassionate, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that dating can be hard, especially if you're looking for a long-term partner or quote-unquote the one. It's a lot that you're looking for in a person. To be compassionate with yourself and to be messy and to, you know, not be too hard on yourself if you're doing what you can do.
Yeah. So, I love all those.
Yeah.
If I could add one myself, I would say don't have so much expectations, because I used to get really nervous about dating sometimes, or I'm like, oh, I don't want to go and this is going to be awkward and uncomfortable and I'm going to be nervous. And, you know, sometimes I would just talk myself out of it. Mm. And when I went in with the mindset of, listen, just get out there, go on a few dates, have fun, and don't have this expectation of like, oh, I need this person to like me and I need to, you know, impress them or whatever. I just sort of treat it now as you're going for a coffee or doing something with a new human who you've never met, and you get to learn about them and they get to learn about you. And you know what? If it doesn't work out, I would have been at home, you know, watching cat videos for the last 2 hours. So instead I got out of the house and got to interact with another person. And best case scenario, you guys hit it off and then you go on another date. Win-win. If it doesn't go well, again, you got to get out of the house and meet someone and probably even understand, okay, this is what I probably didn't, you know, like about this person, or I saw something I didn't like. You could sort of like break it down after, but for me, it's just getting out there and just you're not going to meet someone obviously from your own house. You do have to get out and just lower your expectations. Just go out to be like, you know what, I'm gonna have some fun. If I meet someone cool, awesome. If I don't, that's fine as well.
Yeah, my mom would always say back in the day when I was like dating a bunch, she was like, you're so focused on how you're feeling. And do I like them? Not that that's not important, but she's just like, be in the conversation, like get to know a human being and stop sitting there being like, oh, I'm so worried about myself. And like, do I like them? How am I feeling? Be in the conversation and get to know a human. And it's nerve wracking for everyone. I don't know anyone who can go on a first date and it feels no anxiety. If you do, that's awesome. But I think there's the humbleness and beauty to be like, yeah, it's a little nerve wracking to meet a new person, but that's okay. I'm going to show up, get to know someone, and just be like, I'm self-confidence. Like, I'm great. And you know, I love myself regardless of how this goes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Your mom's a wise person. You've
put. She is. I know. She's going to listen to laugh.
Shout out to Madison's mom.
Big shout out.
So, okay, this leads me to my other question. So in one of your Instagram posts, you pose the questions, will I be bored in a healthy relationship? I know a lot of people in the community talk about when they're going through their healing, especially fearful avoidance, who are used to like chaos and that emotional up and down. And once they've started healing, they might have started dating a secure person. And they find it really boring. And they're like, oh my God, what is going on here? So I was wondering if you could speak to that. Why do you think this happens? And why is it not a bad thing to feel boredom sometimes in a relationship?
This question, I don't know if you've thought about it personally, but it literally made me crazy for so long. Because I was like, how are you supposed to feel? Because you kind of go through these relationships, I think, especially when you're younger, struggling with attachment styles or whatever, of like the highs and the lows, right? You have something that's like super exciting. And like oftentimes when it's toxic, it's like they give you attention, you feel great, and then they pull it away and you're in a low and you're up and down. And I think, again, attachment styles is kind of wired into this of you feel safe and secure, and then they are really distant from you, maybe if they're avoidant. But I think that high and low kind of creates these huge rushes of emotions and these big feelings. Yeah. I was watching the movie, I don't know if you've ever seen it, it's so bad, but it's on Netflix. It's called After. And it's like that Wattpad film they made into a movie. And I'm like, they're the most toxic couple. They go from like hating each other to I'm in love with you. And I'm like, you're glorifying the most toxic, unhealthy relationship.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's like what our eyes are cued towards. It's like it's supposed to be bright lights and passion and like toxicity and flame. And I've been in a relationship like that where it feels like you feel everything. It's amazing, but it's also so unhealthy and it's crazy. And so I think when I realized, I was like, oh, that's actually not what I want. Maybe there's pieces in there, but to find someone who's an actual partner for you and the kind of person that's sustainable and will last a lifetime and be there with you if you go through really hard times is the kind of person that maybe isn't so hot and heavy right away, or that is so up and down. And I think the part about being bored is I think that that word bothered me for a long time, because I was like, I don't think you're going to be bored when you meet someone. It's not that you're going to not like them or not be interested. You're still going to be excited, but it's not going to trigger these crazy sparks or anxiety feelings. I almost feel like it's more like you'd meet someone and have little butterflies and be like curious and excited and want to know more. And that feeling builds over time, which might feel boring because you're like, it's not so crazy. But I actually think that it builds a deeper love and a different type of excitement that feels safe, secure, which might feel boring because it's not so up and down. But I think that when you do your own healing work, you can, it's still so exciting to like somebody. It just might feel boring in comparison, or there might be times where you dated for a while and you're like, oh, we're just sitting here in silence. There's no fighting, like dope. But like, I think it's just a different feeling in the body, a lighter feeling that grows over time, but it's still there. It can still be so exciting and so much more rewarding.
It's developing a new comfort zone. If your comfort zone before was with emotional roller coaster, then that's where you're used to what feels normal. So then it's just an abnormal feeling to have this sort of peacefulness. But I think it is something with time that you start to be like, hey, this is really nice, not having these big fights and dramas and hating each other and making up and breaking up and getting back together. So it is nice, and you know, something that you need to, again, it might be uncomfortable at first, but just because something's uncomfortable, it doesn't mean you should run away from it. It's like, sit with it and, you know, feel it and try to make it your sort of new normal.
Yeah. My therapist always said to me, she was like, your blueprint for dating is so much different than friendship. She's like, your friends are these deep, wonderful people that treat you so well and have all these amazing qualities, but then you're dating and you're throwing that all at the door. And she was like, bring your blueprint into dating. Like when you sit there, you're like, would I want to be friends with you do you kind of give the healthy friend vibe that I'd want? And then that plus chemistry, right?
Right.
It should feel like an amazing friend that you could talk to all the time, but there's obviously more there. Right. And I think that's important to know. I feel like with some of my friends that I've been friends with forever, I'm like, I'm quote unquote bored, but I'm like, we're so deeply connected. We've been friends so long. It's so rewarding. So I kind of try to think about it like that.
Yeah, I like that. That segues into my next question, which this topic's really interesting to me because
it's
friendships and breakups, breaking up with friends. So another one of your podcast episodes, it's called Navigating Friendship Breakups and Outgrowing People. Mm-hmm. And you talk about how this is something normal and everyone goes through this because, you know, as we, especially if you're doing healing work and changing and growing, it's natural to not have the same people around us. Some people are going to fall away. And that's not a bad thing. I know they definitely don't teach us how to break up in a normal relationship, but when it comes to a friendship breakup, do you want to touch on how outgrowing people is a normal part of life? And, you know, it's not something that we should stress out over if it does happen, because it will happen, especially if you're doing this work. And then B, what is the best way to break up with a friend or let things fall away? How do you navigate that in the best possible way?
Yeah, I have been thinking about this so much because I think with dating, it's like you go on a date, you don't vibe, you can send that text of like, sorry, I didn't feel a connection. But it's so awkward to do that with friends.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's such a nuanced topic because there's so many types of friendships. Like, am I breaking up with a friend that's a new friend? Did I go on one friend date? Have we been friends for 10 years? I think the first part of your question is like talking about how it's normal, because it is. I mean, there's just no way you're going to be the same person. I'm a new person every year, every 5 years. Like, I have very few friends that I've carried with my whole life. And those people and I have changed so much, but we've managed to grow together. But I've had a lot of other kind of friends that I've been friends with for a month, that I've been friends with for a few years. And I think that it has to be that way. We don't have enough capacity or space to keep everyone around. And we're here to evolve, right? We're kind of the center point of our life, and other people, I think that whole reason, season, someone's here for a reason, season, or a lifetime is so true. It's like, not everyone's purpose in your life is supposed to be forever. To think that way is a disservice to our growth. And I think that, I just think it's so normal. And I think when you can welcome it and bring people in and be like, just like being able to be an experience rather than the holding on and needing it to be something and just letting it teach you what it is so important. I just, it's a part of life, and it's a hard part of life, but it is a part of life.
And have you legit had to break up with someone, said the words, hey, this is not working? Or, because to me, it is such like a touchy topic. And I've had friends that I've done my growth work and then was starting to feel like we're not aligned anymore. And, you know, even the conversations were not sort of aligned with each other, but it was so hard to tell them, hey, I don't think we have it here anymore. And I imagine on the other side, you felt the same way, but I think we just ended up less and less communication, and it just fizzled out. But I don't know if that's the best, you know, that's more the avoidant way to handle things. But have you ever had to like have the conversation, just tell someone, hey, I don't think this is working?
I've had so many types of friendship breakups. It's sick. Like, yeah, I've had like so many, because I think that I'm a person, I love meeting new people, and I love like relationships are my like jam. So I think that I love meeting new people, which probably causes me to have to separate from more people. But I think there's a bunch of different types, right? I think it's actually what you were saying is actually like the best way to go about it is mutually over time, you kind of distance and you kind of both realize that this is maybe not the best fit. That's like the goal, right? To kind of have that happen. But then there's also what happens when you're friends with someone for a while. I think when it's newer, I think it's okay to stop talking to them. I know that's kind of bad, but I think if you go on one or two hangouts or a few, it's like, you can just kind of like slowly just fall face the earth. Yeah. Maybe not the best advice, but I think with someone new, it's a different story. But when you're friends with someone for a long time and it's not mutual, like let's say they care a lot more or you care a lot more, I personally think that the best thing is to have a conversation, and it's really awkward. I'm like, can we normalize that right now? I want to just create a normalization in life that we do it the same way we do with breakups, because it's so hard. But I think the best thing is to have a conversation and to recognize that let's say if they want to be your friend way more than you, and you're like, this just isn't in alignment for me anymore. I think a lot of people try to distance and make it fizzle out, or they like keep them in their life. And I'm like, that is such a disservice to the other person and to you. I would never want to be friends with someone who is only friends with me because they think that I need them and I would be suffer and be incomplete without them. So I think honesty, and I think meeting it with kindness, because no matter what, whether you stop talking or whether you have a conversation, like, it's going to probably hurt them. But I think the best thing to do is to be honest and be like, hey, I don't really believe in the whole, like, I'm just busy and life is hard right now. I want, like, to genuinely just be like, I feel currently like this isn't fully in alignment for me. And you don't have to go tons of detail. You could be like, maybe like, if something happened, you could just be like, this kind of felt, made me feel uncomfortable. I need some space. I love and care about you. This is really awkward and hard to say, but I'm sending this with love, but at the same time, I need space. I think there's just ways you can frame it that are kind, and then kind of releasing the rest of it and remembering another person's emotions, as much as you care, like, aren't your responsibility. And I know that's awkward and hard, but it's a disservice to yourself and them to be in a relationship that isn't in alignment for you. And if it's not in alignment for you, it shouldn't it really be in alignment for them either. And so the only reason it feels in alignment with them is because you're maybe pretending to enjoy the relationship and you're not. And that's not fair. So yeah, I think just remembering, like, it is kind to end relationships if they aren't in service to you. And it's also like, we're here to live a life that feels good and that is honest. And there's something in your life that constantly makes you feel weird. You know, I've had relationships where I feel really uncomfortable. I'm like, I don't feel aligned anymore. And I've had to, you know, end the friendship kindly. And I still feel bad about it to this day for some things of, you know, I wish I could be everyone's friend all the time, but that's not what we're here for. We're here to grow. We're here to evolve. So I think that's the best thing to do. And to answer your other question of like, yes, I've had a lot of different, you know, verbally or non-verbally, but I think if, as long as you lead with kindness and you honor yourself and you also honor them in a way, I think that that's all you can do.
Yeah. No, so. Those are helpful words. I know for myself, again, coming from more of the avoidance side of things, for matters like this, my sort of new rule is now is like, I'll trade that 5-10 minutes of uncomfortable conversation for like months and months of like thinking about it. And all is like, if it's taking up a lot of real estate in my head and I'm like, okay, just have this conversation. It's 10 minutes. It's going to suck. It's probably not going to be fun, but this is going to give you so much peace of mind. And, you know, you don't have to drag something on for like months and months and months. So I just challenge people, like, I know it's uncomfortable, but it's 5 minutes, 10 minute conversation. And it just saves sort of both people a lot of, you know, false perceptions and narratives and, you know, not knowing where people stand. So not fun, but we got to do it.
I know. I think just honesty, being in integrity with yourself. And I love that. I think short term discomfort for long term wellness for yourself is worth it. Not having you both being like, what's going on? I just think we're too old for that. Yeah. I'm just honest. And I don't think people do it enough. And I think a lot of people are passive. I live in Minnesota, so it's passive world over here. But I think, yeah, lead with kindness.
And I know it's scary for some, you know, when they were kids, when they tried to be honest with their parents, maybe their parents had a bad reaction. So they're like, oh my gosh, when I speak my truth or I speak my mind, I get trouble. Or I get love withheld from me. So it can be scary, right? So again, it's something you have to develop and make a new comfort zone. And slowly but surely, it gets easier and easier.
Yeah. And they might get mad. And I think that's like an important thing to, you know, be like, I'm going to do what I need to do. And they might not have a reaction at all. And they might have a horrible reaction. Regardless, your answer is the same, that like, you are kind, you stated what you need to. And that's your responsibility, and that's all you have to own. Even if, you know, the response isn't what you want, that also isn't yours.
Totally. So, like you said, with honesty, like, you're being honest. Would you rather that I pretend and lie for years just to like keep the charade going?
Yeah, no, it's exhausting.
Not fun. Awesome. Okay, so we're coming toward the end of the podcast. Just want to know, is there a tool or a strategy or just something you want to leave with our audience that can help them in their everyday lives?
I had a therapist. I remember this is all we talked about was self-compassion. And I was like, this is the dumbest topic ever. Be like kind to yourself. But I was like, wow, I realize how much I know I beat myself up when I'm not where I want to be yet or just anything. And it's like, oh my goodness, we deserve to talk kindly to ourselves. Sometimes we're not going to be where we want to be. Sometimes we're trying our all and it isn't getting us where we want to be. Sometimes we mess up, and realizing we're all very human and we're very messy and just being able to be compassionate with yourself and putting that into practice is like the most loving thing you can do. To be, I know it's hard. I know it's a weird thing, but really, instead of meeting yourself with unkindness, to meet yourself with that kindness of, oh, like, I'm not where I want to be, but I've been trying. It's a practice I'm working on. And I think that it builds a lot of joy in your life too, because it builds a love for yourself. You're like, I'm going to give myself love in this moment versus treating myself like I wouldn't allow anyone else to treat me. So I think self-compassion is like a tool to develop. And I know how I've practiced it in my life and I'm infinitely happier. So.
Right. I love that. And you know, at the end of the day, we still have an inner child inside of ourselves. So imagine like your 9-year-old kid came home from school one day, just had the worst day ever and was like so upset, or maybe they were being made fun of and they were believing the things that their peers were saying about them. You wouldn't go in on them and be like, oh, well, yeah, you probably deserve it. Or like, yeah, you're acting this way or that way. You would be so loving to them and be like, hey, we're going to have bad days like this and that's okay. And what they said, that's not true whatsoever. And you're still such an amazing human being. And I'm so happy you're here. You know what I mean? You wouldn't do that to a young kid. So we shouldn't be doing that to sort of ourselves. We need to give ourselves that love and care. So I really like how you put that.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, we talked about a lot. An hour flew by. is there anything else you wanted to share with our audience?
I think something I've been thinking about a lot lately is like the seasons of our life and how sometimes if we're in a season of our life where we're single, or if we're in a season of our life where we're grinding and working on our business, or if we're in a season where there's a lot happening, or there's not happening, like, I think to really just be like, I think our seasons are just meant for a reason. And like, maybe we're not where we're want to be yet is because right now the season is so vital and so important. And I feel that for myself is like in a lot of business growth. I was like, maybe right now it's supposed to be the time to be hungry and there'll be a time where I can just float by and chill or whatever. But I think that I really just believe each season of your life brings you to the next, and to look at it as that. Again, if I didn't go through my horrible depression, I wouldn't be in this phase. If I'm not in this phase, I won't have the business flourishing the way even more so that I want. Yeah. I just think that's something I've been really thinking about lately is like, maybe right now it's not the time to be in that place because you have to be here first.
I love that. That even, I feel like pressure off my own shoulders. You know, like sometimes we feel like we need to be this like 24/7, 365 production machine and like just killing it all the time and being happy. But there are seasons where you're not going to be in that state. And maybe it's more of an introverted inward stage where you're not, you know, producing all this kind of stuff, but you're going inside. And I love the idea of seasons, and you're not going to be that like taking on the world and kicking butt 365 days a year. So
that's exhausting.
Yeah, I know. I'm exhausted just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Awesome. So Madison, what are you offering these days? I know you're doing coaching. Is there any other things that we can know about?
Yeah. So right now I'm just doing one-to-one coaching. I'm working on a few things, some group coaching and courses stuff. So stay tuned. And then otherwise, yeah, for more talks like this, I have my podcast, which I put out every week, and social media too, for more like bite-sized little helpful things. But otherwise, yeah, that's that.
Awesome. And then lastly, how can people get in touch with you, or how can they find you on social media, TikTok, whatnot?
My Instagram is at Wellness Mads. I created that so long ago, but it's what it is now. My TikTok, I was able to get my first and last name. So it's at madison.brandt. And then my website is madisonbrandt.com. So for more about my coaching and all that. So yeah.
Perfect.
See you guys on the other side of things. So
yeah, for sure. Join Madison's TikTok and Instagram and all that. Madison, thank you so much for your time today. I really enjoyed it. And I think our listeners got to learn a lot of cool stuff from you today. So just thanks so much for being here, and hope you had fun too.
I had so much fun. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
For sure. For sure. And for all our viewers and listeners, as always, best of luck on your healing journey, and we'll see you next time.